Hello and welcome. I'm Lisa Carl, CEO of the Australian Design Centre. This is an Australian Design Centre ADC on Tour exhibition. The story so far celebrates the 10th living treasure, Master of Australian Craft, Helen Britton. Helen Britton is a multidisciplinary Australian artist based in Munich, Germany. Her practice includes jewellery, sculpture, drawings, stencils and installations, and is informed by popular culture, threatened traditions, environmental destruction and human anxiety. We're about to start the tour, but first, some background to this exhibition. Living Treasures, Masters of Australian Craft is an initiative of the Australian Design Centre. For over 20 years, Living Treasures has celebrated the achievements of Australia's most iconic craft practitioners through a touring exhibition, a major monograph publication, and an interview with the artist in our podcast called Object. It's important to know that a Living Treasure exhibition isn't an historic survey, but is a current reflection of a master practitioner's process and output. In this audio tour, you'll hear from the artist herself, Helen Britton, describing key pieces in the exhibition. From the deep research that goes into each work to the materials, techniques, and of course, the stories behind them. When you hear this sound, you can pause this tour and move to the next piece. Before we dive deep into seven of Helen Britton's works, look around you and really take in the exhibition, the colours, the use of the space, and the different kinds of work that fill the gallery.
When I make exhibitions, I'm really interested in working quite closely with the space. We're particularly focused on coloured walls and lighting to create a kind of coherent experience, because what you will see is the full diversity of my practice. I am very well known as an art jeweller, but in fact my practice has always been quite heterogeneous, linked with themes rather than with a specific kind of practical making. When I found out that I was to be the 10th living treasure, it was very, very exciting, and I really took the opportunity to draw threads between recent work and new works, also knowing that the space would provide me with a kind of comprehensive platform to show what it is that I actually do.
Let's start with My Godmother's House, a set of 20 photographs taken in northeast New South Wales near Yamba on Yagal country.
My Godmother's House is a photographic documentation of the house of my godmother, Kath Carr. I would spend time with my godmother, who was a very, very interesting woman. She encouraged me to paint, to construct things, and to make jewellery. When I was working in that house with my godmother, there was no difference between painting, creating a collage with dried leaves and flowers, or making a piece of jewellery. All of these things happened simultaneously and flowed from one to the other. And I do believe that is how I still make my work today. And it's certainly apparent in this exhibition that you are looking at. Returning to that house after 40 years and finding the interior still intact, although she had passed away in the 1990s, was quite an epiphany for me. It helped me understand where all of my creative interests had come from. Also, the diversity of my creative interests. Over several years, I took over 700 photographs. We've selected 20 for the exhibition. What was really fascinating for me were the collections within the house, so shell collections, stone collections, gathered objects and how they were arranged. And then, of course, the path of time. So you'll often see the dust. I was very interested in photographing the dust as a metaphor and the material reality of time passing. but also, for example, in the photographs of the bracelets on the peeling red vinyl, I do see very strong references to my own construction of some of my bracelets.
Next, mysterious path of matter and time. A small cabinet framed by branches.
The mysterious path of matter and time is a work made out of my childhood detritus, a cabinet that I made about 30 years ago, and cement branches. What's really interesting about this piece is if you look closely into the cabinet, into the little cases, you're going to find all kinds of indicators of my history, such as the train tickets from Newcastle to Sydney, my high school and primary school badges, all kinds of things that were played a significant role in growing up. I guess the framing with the cement branches does give it a kind of ritualized, almost reliquary object-like atmosphere, which is what I was trying to achieve. And it is also, in the true sense of the expression, cemented into eternity. Cement is a very interesting material because it is so stable and has such a long life. And it's an ancient material, which I think we also tend to forget.
Next, Junkyard 3. Helen describes this piece as a monumental necklace made of many parts.
Junkyard 3 is the third of these monumental necklaces or necklace-like objects for the story so far. I've created a piece using absolutely everything I could find left over in my studio and put it together. I've used the circle and bone catch for many years. For me, it is an interesting way to close a necklace, a circular necklace, with these two symbols. And the rest of the pieces in Junkyard 3 are often leftovers from my industrial series, so works that were preoccupied with the kind of environment that I grew up with in Newcastle in the 1970s and early 80s, where BHP was kind of at its peak. For example, all of the barrels and rods and piles of stuff that you would see lying around on the periphery of industrial areas. It's almost a bit like creating a flower arrangement. It does take a long time to get the balance right. It's all recycled silver and paint. Usually a lot of these pieces would go back to my recycler and be melted down and turned into fresh plates so I could continue working. So you'll find pieces that actually appear in other works that were either left over or they weren't quite well made enough or it didn't work out. This piece does contain the history of the past 20 years of jewellery and object-making practice in my studio.
Next, the magic cupboard. Look for a big open cupboard that's magical.
The magic cupboard is constructed out of a cupboard that was in the garage of the house that my mother, my brother and I moved into when I was 8. I immediately was intrigued by this cupboard, particularly because of the proportion. I did feel it was almost like a fairy tale cupboard. It was in a fairly dilapidated state and life rolls on as always. And then when my mother moved to a smaller house, much to my surprise and thrill, she said, "Well, I took your cupboard with me." So this was already fantastic. I didn't know what to do with the cupboard, but I was very happy that it had been saved. And when I was told I was to be the living treasure of Australian craft, I decided to create a kind of cabinet of wonders that included everything going back to my early childhood, the things that kind of triggered my imagination over all of those years, and then include archival works. So there is a kind of melange of significant things out of my life so far, and then key works from the early period of my practice, but also some very, very recent works. And the whole thing interrelates. I drew all over the entire surface of the cupboard. I lined it with old printing proofs from my early studies, textile printing proofs, lino cuts. And with the help of my husband, David Bielander, we reconstructed it completely for the exhibition. The mirrors have engravings of lyrebirds, which you will find a lyrebird engraved onto a mirror made by my godmother in my Godmother's House series. So I took that drawing and engraved it into these mirrors and then put them back into the cupboard. So on the bottom shelf, there is a porcelain plate painted by my godmother that she made that as a gift to me. And she was very interested to make something not conventional because she thought I'd appreciate that more. So it's quite a dynamic drawing of geckos. So I've included that. On the middle lower middle shelf is a cardigan knitted by my mother that she wore and then I wore. There's a reference there to a family of makers, particularly women making things to sustain their families. On the top shelf are a pile of plants made by my brother. In the drawer are some of my dolls put to rest, and on top of them is an artwork called Rosalie Chatelaine. It's a piece I made with Rosalie Gascoigne in mind. You'll see some of my early books. There is a chromed book with handmade paper, and inside that book are photographs of animals' skins. Photography is a really important part of my practice, and these books are from the late 90s. There are two car books. There's also a brain book, and inside the brain, photographs of clouds and a poem about how thoughts form. Hanging on the sides of the cupboards are two sentinels, a wolf and a horse. These are recent works. They are pendant-like. One could wear them, but they are there to protect the cupboard and its contents. So for the magic cupboard, there is a complete inventory, and it reads a little bit like a Dada's poem. The inventory is in the book, and that inventory will give you incredible insight into the cupboard.
Next, the big and the small things. A large wall piece of paintings and jewellery depicting animals and bones.
The Big and the Small Things is a large wall piece. It's about 2.5 metres wide by 2.5 metres high, and it's a group of paintings and jewellery, but in fact, now it is one thing. It's no longer something that can be taken apart. For me, it's a complete work. The paintings are of various animals, and I gathered the frames from the flea markets of Munich, and then I also cut them down to the right size to fit the drawings. It's very important to be particularly careful with the proportion of the frames. And then all of the backings of the frames I tore out, I painted bones on those. I guess the bones make this work much more somber. They often, you know, they are what's left over after we've eaten an animal, or what's left over from us. They are what we find often on the ground or along the roadsides of Australian highways. whilst I don't want to be specific about what do the bones mean, it does give this work a certain gravity. So the backs of the frames are all bones, and in the frames themselves are animals. What I did was I made a huge series of drawings or paintings of animals over 5 days. And every time an animal came into my head, I would quickly Google it and then make a painting as fast as I could. So I made 150 paintings, and I made an exhibition of that series called If You Could Feel Our Sadness, You Would Drown in Your Own Tears. And the paintings, I selected a group of animals out of that series to push the work further. The big and the small things came from that series of paintings. So you'll see a bilby, you'll see a swan, you will see a gecko, you'll see a dingo, you will see a koala, you will see a poodle, and you will see a penguin. And if you look very closely, you will also see that these paintings were the basis for the Galalite animals. When I make my Galalite animals, I use the paintings as the point of departure for then carving them into Galalite. So in a way, the Galalite animals are a kind of three-dimensional painting. There's a shark, a crab, a crocodile, a kangaroo, and a penguin. And these are carved out of Galalite. Galalite is a casein plastic. This particular Galalite is French. It was made in 1920. Plastic is really the wrong word because it's made out of milk powder and formaldehyde and pigment. So in series I've made about animals and how they must feel in relation to us, I've often taken this particular material because of what it carries within its molecules.
Next, wisdom's despair and wisdom's blindness. One is a brooch, one is a drawing, both of owls.
So we're looking at wisdom's despair and wisdom's blindness. One of them is a brooch, and the other one is a drawing. And it's important to realise that I see this as one work. They're not two separate works. It is a kind of diptych. And thematically, it is also about reflections on environmental ruin. Wisdom's Despair is a large drawing. We have an owl sitting on a burnt branch looking over either a desert or a sea. It's acrylic and ink on paper. And we have an owl sitting on a branch with enormous diamond eyes. So that's wisdom's blindness. The owl figure was based on a childhood trinket, brooch, that came out of a chewing gum machine. And I have a collection of these kinds of small figurative brooches that have become kind of iconic references in my work. Wisdom's blindness it's about the size of your hand. It's patinated pressed silver with two large coloured diamonds as eyes, two matching brown diamonds. The diamonds are sourced from a company that I work with that only have non-conflict diamonds, and they're quite intriguing in terms of the amount of depth and facets within those ancient stones. I find it very interesting to work with diamonds because they are a really fascinating stone. Nothing sparkles quite like diamonds, and I think this is why they've intrigued people for centuries. It's very important to remember there are all different kinds of diamonds, and in fact, diamonds aren't that rare. There's a monopoly on white diamonds, keeping them off the market so that they aren't devalued. This piece is pressed silver, so I work with a hydraulic press and acrylic forms that I cut by hand. Then the very thin sheets of silver are roller pressed before I start work on them, and then soldered together. So it has a kind of three-dimensional quality.
Next, the Story So Far monograph. Presenting Helen's extraordinary, often colourful and playful works. Sit down and have a read.
Within the exhibition, there is the publication, The Story So Far. What's important to realise is that this is an artwork in its own right. It was created for this exhibition, and it includes a huge amount of detail about the works that you'll see in the exhibition. In addition to this, it covers my practice for the past 40 years. There's a table and chairs so that you can sit down, take time, look through the book and read the texts within the context of the exhibition and learn more about what you're seeing.
I hope you enjoyed this audio tour. If you'd like to hear more from this incredible artist, you can listen to an interview between Helen and myself on the podcast. Just search for Object, Stories of Design and Craft in your podcast app. We'd like to thank Visions of Australia, the federal government's regional exhibition touring program, for funding support towards this audio tour. The audio tour was produced by Jane Curtis. Sound engineering is by John Jacobs. This audio tour was made on Gadigal Country. Thanks for listening.